You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders, for coders, about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beej, the optimistic newbie developer. Welcome to another episode of Complete Developer Podcast. This week, we're talking about ways in which developers and many other professionals fail at time management. We're skipping some of the more obvious ones that we've covered previously and talking about some things that really eat into your time in a non-obvious way. We'll go through each of these and discuss what happens and how to be more resilient and able to avoid these problems. But before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
Well, this week I've been working on a lot of UI work, and I'm using Knockout.js, which I've used before, and I just forgot how much I really like that little library because it just does one thing. It gets data from the control and puts it in a class and vice versa. Like, it's just that round trip data binding, and that's pretty much all it does. But just how easy and expressive that model is, because I'm cleaning up this morass of jQuery event-based code that's, you know, like everything's spaghetti code and there's global variables, and it's pretty gnarly. And I cleaned it up some before, but the fact that I'm now switching it over to a Knockout model really is, it's really helping, like as far as being able to reason about the code, because I can go to where that piece of code is and actually set a breakpoint easily in the Chrome debugging tools. Yeah, you know, I could actually find it versus it being, you know, spidered out throughout the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to worry about, okay, do I call the val method on this jQuery object? And, you know, what do I do if it's, you know, if the set is empty? Like, I'm able to just use data binding constructs to work with it. And so it's just a lot more simple.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because the last few weeks I've been playing around with Knockout, because I was talking to someone about using Angular for data binding.
Yeah.
Which Angular is very good for that, but it's just got so much more. And they said, have you ever used Knockout? And I was like, well, no. And they said, if all you're doing is data binding, use Knockout. You won't have all that overhead of Angular. And so I've started playing around with it just for that reason. And it's funny that you mentioned that you're doing it too, because it was someone that I don't even think you know that told me that.
Well, just all the, you know, like with my Ajax calls and stuff that are behind the scenes, I mean, yes, they're there. If I was doing Angular, I think I would probably be in a worse spot, because I would have to be implementing some things that mm-hmm. I really don't want to fiddle with. And it's also very much a black box.
Yes, it is.
Because it's like, oh, well, what happened? Well, the route wasn't quite right. Oh, wait, this data binding construct wasn't right. Oh, wait, this property on this thing, and it's spread over like five files. Whereas with Knockout, I can put the model right in the HTML. I'm not saying that this is a good practice for like when you actually deploy, but when you're building the thing and mm-hmm. you're figuring out all the pieces, it's great to just have one window open that's a split screen between your JavaScript and your HTML, and it's one file. It always gets loaded. There's no caching issues. There's none of the junk, and I can just make it work, and then I can split it out.
Yeah.
And it
makes perfect sense.
Constructed in a way that works very well as far as separation of concerns for me.
As far as I'm concerned, my nephew has been in town this past weekend, sort of a long weekend for him. They came in Thursday and they're leaving tomorrow, but we've been to the park, the Discovery Center. We rode around on the lawnmower, and he has a new nickname for me. He calls me Buddy.
Don't call me Buddy, friend.
I'm not your buddy, guy.
That's right. I'm trying to remember where that's from. Is that from South Park? It had to be South Park.
I went over to my mom's place. That's where my sister and him are staying while they're in town. I went over the night they got here. You know, walked in and said, hey, buddy, how's it going? He looked at me like I was crazy. He's like, why are you calling me that? And he's two, by the way. And so I said, well, aren't you my buddy? And you're my little buddy. And he looked up at me and he's like, buddies. And so ever since then, I am no longer Uncle BJ. I am Buddy.
Okay.
Also, I recently went through the interview process for a position similar to one that took me up to New York City back the end of last year. This one's a bit closer to home. However, I ended it when they told me that they were going to make changes to my resume to make it appear that I had work experience to that I didn't have. Basically, they said, you know, these jobs, they want you to have 3 to 5 years work experience, and you have the knowledge for it, but we're just going to adjust it so that your resume appears.
In other words, they're going to lie.
And that's what I said. I said, that is a lie, and I won't tolerate that. Like, I have a very unique ethic, but lying is no.
Yeah. The thing is lies get found out because you're going to be spending so much mental overhead trying to maintain a lie. Even if you were okay with it, it's just not worth the effort.
Yeah. That's
true. And besides the fact that it is blatantly immoral.
I pretty much told them, if I come down there and go through your program and you lie on my resume, I will tell anyone that interviewed me that it is a lie. Like, you don't want me there because I'm not going to put up with that. I'll tell them that you changed my resume and lied on it.
Yeah. And I've had interactions with recruiters in the past that have done that. And
yeah. No. So basically, I told them, because it was a really great offer and a much better deal than the one up in New York.
Yeah.
And would have been great if up until that point in the interview, and I just ended it right there. I said, nope, like, I will not tolerate that. And I don't want to work with anyone that will.
So I guess it's about time to roll the music.
This week for IoTs, I'm continuing our hacking retro technologies with a project titled 1981 Portable VCR Raspberry Pi Media Center. Now, this is really interesting because this takes the early 80s Sharp VC2300H portable VCR, which, by the way, was the very first home VCR system. And one that my family used up until around 2005 or 6, I think. Like, yeah. It was still in use in my parents' house. What this does is it replaces the core of the VCR with a Raspberry Pi and uses the RASP BMC Center Media for software. It also has an Arduino-based clock and EL wire tape that ejects to reveal a USB hub.
Huh.
It even uses the original buttons for functions like play, pause, fast forward, rewind, and has a 15-inch HD screen on the back that can also be controlled with a Media Center remote. So, who's talking to us this week?
Well, we grabbed a comment from Jason Belcher. He said, just listen to the latest episode. Seems like it was kind of for me in a way. Your audio quality seems pretty tip-top. I just want to let you know how encouraging it is to me.
And that was right after our episode on recruiters.
Yep.
With Lena Mills. Actually, we got a lot of great comments from that episode.
Yeah, well, I mean, it really, like, it wasn't for anybody so much as it is for, like, more than half of the development population that I know. And that's why we pushed that so much.
It's really funny because Jason and probably about 4 or 5 other people that I communicate with on social media that listen to the show all said, I felt like this episode was directed right at me.
Yeah. Well,
and it's because we addressed some of the issues that they have had, or the misunderstandings they have had too with working with recruiters. I honestly think it's one of our best episodes.
Oh, it totally is. Yeah. I mean,
and major thanks to Lena for coming on for that episode, because I talked to a recruiter at another company who is having all the recruiters at that company listen to the episode.
So we're going to be getting phone calls here pretty soon.
Yeah. Basically, he said that that Lena really knew her stuff, and he's having all his recruiters listen to it so that when people ask, well, what does a recruiter do? they can answer the way she did on the show. So thank you, Jason. We've got a Complete Developer Podcast swag bag just for you. And if you'd like a bag of Complete Developer swag, leave us a comment on the website or a review in iTunes or Stitcher. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus. If you leave us a comment on any of these and we read it on the show, we'll send you some swag. Why another episode on time management? We've had quite a few of these.
Well, because it's always timely. No, like in all seriousness, time is the resource that you are least able to get more of.
Time is on my side.
Keep your day job, bro.
Hey, do you remember that movie? Fallen? It's like the scariest movie I've ever seen.
I don't know if I've seen that or not, but
oh, dude, it came out in the 90s. Oh, it's like super scary.
So the thing is you can't get more time, right? Like even extremely rich people have a very hard time like actually getting more time in their life.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like the actual number of years they have. So the only thing you can do is be more effective with what you have. And time management is a really complicated topic. We discussed earlier basic strategies for time management. We've discussed, you know, tracking your time and how that works. And at each level, it's almost like a phase shift, because what got you to the point where you're managing time at a certain level won't get you to the next level.
That's so true.
And so this is a little bit more of an advanced thing. And what we want to do is talk about things that burn through your time that are not entirely obvious and don't make most of the lists. Like I crawled through so many lists online, and a lot of the stuff that I had down was just not there.
Mm-hmm.
Or it wasn't there in the way that I look at it. It was at a more basic level. Obviously, you're going to want to refer to some of our earlier episodes if you don't have those things locked in yet. Because this is more of once you get to the point where all that other stuff is sorted, then you start looking at these things.
Well, it's like most of these are things that contribute to poor time management and kind of almost have a snowball effect.
So once you got the basic stuff, then you can start fixing the things that are not necessarily direct causes that are burning through your time, but are things that lead to behaviors that cause your time to get burned up. And the first one of these is being uncomfortable.
Yeah, we've discussed distractions before, but general discomfort can actually hurt your ability to get things done to such a degree that it hurts your time management.
Yeah. And a big example of this is, you know, things like office temperature. Like if it's cold, it's going to be enough of a distraction where you stop every so often, you rub your hands together. You're going to get all these little things that are little breaks in your flow. Well, what happens to these breaks? They compound.
Yeah. Now, I'll be honest. Me personally, I don't have too much of an issue with it ever being too cold.
Nor do I. But too hot? Too
hot?
Oh, it's awful.
I can't function if it's too hot.
Yeah.
Especially when I go visit family. I have to explain to people like my little sister, you can wear a coat and a bathrobe and wrap yourself up in a blanket.
But you don't want me stripping down to temperature appropriate attire.
Yes,
when
exactly.
It's 80 degrees in your house. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've exactly. had that discussion a few times. It's like, look, you're going to see things that you don't want to see if you keep this up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Also, an environment that is too loud or too quiet, really?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I've worked, and this isn't very common. I've worked in one or two places that, the place that I worked that, you know, we had a startup and we were building software for massage therapy, places. A lot of times I worked late because there was an ownership arrangement and there was some other stuff. And so I was sometimes there at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night coding.
Yeah. Huh.
And it was so dry. It was so quiet. You could hear a pin drop. There was no traffic outside. There's nothing. And you're in this creepy old building and it's dead silent.
Where was that?
It was... It's kind of close to Music Row. Well, it was right off of Music Row.
Okay, I know where you're at.
Yeah. And, you know, there were recording studios in there, but all those were sound insulated.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
And the office where we had, you know, subdued, there was subdued lighting. It was, you know, the walls were kind of thick. The carpet was thick. Like, it was just, it was a graveyard quiet. And so that late at night, like anything you do here just completely wrecks your concentration.
Yeah, I guess I can kind of see that. But as for me, I like to listen to music when I code.
Yeah.
And so I don't really deal with, I rarely have environments that are even too loud because I just turn the music up. And
I have a continual problem where I work right now with the environment being too loud because we got one guy that's remote and he who shall not be named gets on the conference call with him.
Ben?
Yeah.
We said his name.
Oh, well, anyway, he'd rather be Voldemort. but he, you know, the thing is the other guy's quite loud. And so Ben matches his cadence and how much he projects his voice to what the other guy does. And it doesn't take very long before you're sitting there and you can hear it over noise canceling headphones.
Really?
Yeah. And you just have to go, well, okay, I'm going to get up and walk out because, yeah, I can continue to code in that environment. But what will happen is I'll make mistakes or I'll forget some little thing. And then later I'm going to have to go find it.
I can totally see that.
Yeah. So discomfort is a pretty big deal. And the other thing is a lot of it can also be emotional issues. So like if you just had a fight with your spouse, or your parents or whatever, like somebody close to you, and then you go to work and you don't have that resolved, you're not going to be your best self, while you're working.
I can speak to this.
Yeah. 'Cause you've had quite a bit of that.
Yeah. Lately. Especially lately. The last few years. Yeah, I've been through
one way or another.
Yeah, I've been through a divorce and a few other things, and there are jobs where I have told my boss, I'm like, hey, my full attention is not here. Not that I was trying to be,
yeah,
like that, but it's like, you know, I've just signed my divorce papers. Yeah. I really should be taking time off, but I need to work. So
you're not broke.
Yeah.
And, you know, financial stress is a big one.
That's true.
Like I've worked with some companies that didn't directly ask how your financial situation was, but they tried to kind of beat around the edge of it during interviews because they want to know that you're actually going to be stable, mm-hmm. and you're not always going to have problems because they've been burned bad enough. And so it's very easy for this kind of stuff to pile up and get to where you just can't be effective.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
And it does absolutely kill your time management because what do? You make mistakes. Then trying to fix those mistakes, you're still distracted because you're not dealing with the root issue. And it snowballs from there.
Yeah, and to fix this, you need to resolve discomforts as soon as possible so that they don't grow into active distractions. It's really better to interrupt problems than to be interrupted by them.
Yeah. And so this is a kind of a proactive sort of thing. Again, these are small things that snowball. Like this is why we put this way. This is not obviously your first priority for fixing time management, but this is later on once you've gotten everything figured out.
Yeah.
Another one is using substandard tools. in my career, I have worked at quite a few places where my development machine, and this is some places that had a great deal of money, and the development machine I had on my desk at work was a quarter of the speed of the one I had at home that wasn't top line for the market. And they were like, oh yeah, it's no big deal if it takes 5 minutes to compile. You know, and you think about how often you compile during a day, like you want those rapid feedback loops, and that just completely obliterates that. And the other thing is you're not going to sit there and wait, right? You're gonna start a compile, and then you're gonna go to your email, or you're gonna go to the restroom,
My temptation is to say, all right, if it's no big deal if it takes 5 minutes to compile, then it's no big deal if I drink a beer every time I have to compile, right?
Right. Because you can totally wipe out a beer in 5 minutes. I just saw it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is a provable thing that you're capable of doing.
I completely understand this. We've talked about it before, but actually we talked about it earlier this evening. Remember when I had the issue with unit testing for the blogging engine I was writing?
Yeah.
And I talked to you and to He Who Should Not Be Named, and both of you gave me the exact same list of things to do that I had already done. And when I told you, I'm like, yeah, I've already done every one of those and went through the results, you said, oh, well, now it's an interesting problem.
Yeah.
We put the code on your machine.
And it ran.
It ran. No problem. Then you're like, well, let me see how it works on yours. So I tried to run it on mine and it didn't. The only thing we could figure was I was using the community edition of Visual Studio and you have the pro edition.
Yeah. Well, of course, the other thing is you're on a slower box. So it could also be a timing issue or a memory issue or something weird like that. Because you can really, really destroy your ability to manage your time with bad equipment. Mm-hmm. And the thing is a lot of these tend to be things that's like, well, it only takes a minute more, right? You remember your audio processing when you switched to Linux for doing, you know, some of the audio editing. Remember how much of a jump that was? And it was like every little operation is not really all that bad, but you're doing hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're just sitting there going, well, my entire day just got wasted.
Which is really funny because I'm back on Windows to use Reaper.
Yeah.
And it's like every little step I take, every breath I take. No.
Yeah.
No. Every
Stalker song, right?
Yeah. No, every little step I take, it cuts a minute or two off of each function. But in the long term, like over the process of editing an entire episode, that takes hours.
Yeah. Hours of tedious crap.
Yeah. When I first started, it was taking me 12 to 13 hours per episode. And then I moved to Linux and that cut down to 6. And then I moved to, we got the better equipment and I started doing it with Reaper. And now it takes me about 2 hours to edit. Like I would say the entire production timeline.
Well, and most of that is listening through it.
Yeah.
You know, listening to it twice through, basically.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it. I mean,
you can't really do that any faster.
Yeah, there's no way to make it faster than what it is now.
Yeah, and the thing is when you're waiting on a computer, it's very easy to step off and do things like, oh, I don't know, email, social media, you know, switching over to a video game, trolling people, various forums. Not that I ever do that.
riding around on rolly chairs, having
Nerf gun fights. Yeah. I mean, it just, you can
really used to do in high school.
You can really burn a lot of time. And then what happens? It's like, well, this thing only took a minute, but because I stepped over to do something else, an hour later, I come back.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've lost this huge chunk of time. It's just really easy to screw up and do. Now, the other thing is when your computer has problems, you know, you're stuck. And especially, you know, cheap hardware is really, really good about giving you expensive problems.
As I have learned.
Yeah, and crappy operating systems will do that too. Windows Update nailed me on my server a couple weeks ago, and I spent like 3 hours sorting that out because it decided that, hey, I'm going to turn off remote desktop and I'm going to screw up a couple other things. And basically what I ended up having to do is I had to drag a monitor over and go find a keyboard floating around somewhere.
Did you move to the one that was in here already?
It was somewhere weird. Like
I might have moved it when I was setting stuff
It
up.
Wasn't where I expected it. So it was, you know, but I had to spend all that time when I had other things to do suddenly. Mm-hmm. And bad hardware is really good for that. Operating systems that like to auto update themselves and turn off remote desktop are also not very nice on this.
It just doesn't make any sense to me for a server.
Yeah. I was going, you know, I think what happened is we shut it down before the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came up, you know, like, cause it'll do the Windows updates and do it. But the updates shouldn't be changing rules like that.
No, they shouldn't.
Cause it's Windows. A lot of servers are headless. So don't do that. But you know, again, you're dealing with an inferior operating system and these are the problems you have.
But if Windows is inferior, what is a superior?
Well, it obviously starts with Sue. And Imperial, right? So it's SU. It's like sudo. Obviously, you want to use Linux.
Okay.
As indicated,
you to say
as indicated by that title. Yeah, I mean, like if I can ever get over there, because I do. I want to get rid of this these kind of problems. It's just I can't.
It will.
Yeah.
Pseudo, go get me a beer.
sorry, you don't have pseudo permissions on this hardware. Yeah. How do you fix this? Obviously, it's kind of obvious you throw money at it. Sometimes that can cure an awful lot of ills. And sometimes that is the best way to do it. Like, obviously, you don't want to go and say, okay, I'm going to buy the absolute top of the line. But when you're pretty close to the bottom, getting to the upper middle can be, you know, that can be an 80% improvement in what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's talk about my laptop, for example. It's a POS.
No, it would have to be better to be that bad.
Okay, well, we're just going
to
talk about my
laptop. I like to refer to it as your crap top, actually.
Yes, you do. You've done that on many occasions. But
publicly and loudly.
Yes. You know, that does not mean that the next machine I buy should be a Surface Book.
Yeah.
Like $5,000 laptop.
Yeah, that's not reasonable.
No, but if I went and spent, I think I spent like, what, $300, $400 on this laptop because it's what I
could afford. Years
ago. Yeah, many years ago. And, you know, if the next one I get, I go and I spend $1,200, $1,500 on it, you know, I can get a good enough machine to do what I want.
Yeah, and do it for a while.
Actually, I could probably get a better machine than the Surface Book.
Yeah.
It just won't, you know, have all the features like being able to remove the monitor and use it as a tablet.
Yeah.
Just so cool. I want one so bad.
Yeah, but I mean, using bad hardware, old hardware, stuff that's not designed to actually be particularly user-friendly,
mm-hmm.
you know, this goes all the way down to, you know, what tools your auto mechanic uses, right? They don't get the cheap set of wrenches because you're using it all the time. You don't want something that, oh, the wrench breaks and now I got to go find another one of this, you know, weird size. Like that's awful when you're, you know, getting paid by the hour.
Oh, I completely agree. I remember when we were setting up some equipment, I think it was some workout equipment here, and you needed a wrench set. We went to the hardware store and I was like, well, here's just go ahead and just get the wrench you need.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I want to go ahead and get a full wrench set.
And a good one.
Yeah. And you're like, I'm going to get a high quality one because
I don't want to be back here.
Yeah. I don't want to worry about this.
Yeah. So a lot of times if you take a small, annoying and time consuming task and buy a specialized tool for it, it can also save you a lot of time. So like, instead of going, okay, I'm going to replace my laptop. Well, what are you doing on your laptop? You're doing development, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's say that certain things, you know, like checking email, you do that at random times at night, right? You might be better off buying a cheap little Amazon tablet that can get your email. And, you know, for that task, and now that thing is fast, that client doesn't have to run on the box. So sometimes you can just go, hey, I'm going to get two tools instead of one and get individual specialized things.
Now this is interesting because the current trends in technology are to combine.
Oh yeah, things. Yeah. You I think mean, about like a Swiss like a, Army knife.
Well, it's like I was saying about the Surface Book. It is a laptop that you can remove the screen and have a tablet.
Yeah,
actually, a really powerful tablet. But
yeah, and you know the one-size-fits-all type tools are great in the sense that, okay, you have that one tool, but a lot of times there's just one or two little things you may need to optimize.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can tear it apart and go, okay, I'm just going to get two separate tools that do their individual things. So that can help you a lot of times as well. And sometimes a substandard tool is simply your technique. This is why we do coding katas.
Yeah,
But I mean, the biggest thing is like your testing of tool chains, and you're figuring out like how can I use this more effectively. Sometimes it's just your technique is like a bad piece of equipment. Another example of this is if you can't type, like you need to fix that.
Yeah, if you can't type in this industry, you definitely need to fix that.
If you don't know the shortcut keys in your IDE and you have to use the mouse, you need to drill that and make that go away. Because you're effectively a bad piece of equipment at that point.
That is so painful when you're trying to learn them.
Yeah,
and you don't know them. and you're just like forcing yourself.
Yep. But you got to do it.
Once you get those down, oh my goodness.
Yeah. You just make, you make an investment in better equipment and better practices so that you can.
And sometimes that's an investment of time to where, yeah, it's actually going to be slower when you start to learn the shortcut keys, because it's going to take you longer to do things trying to remember those. But as they get drilled in, the payout is going to be so much more time saved that it's worth.
If you save the time, you can actually use the time to get better.
Yeah. And well, what I'm saying is, though, when you're first learning to do that, it takes longer than using the mouse. And that expense in time is going to be worth, it's worth the expense later on, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And it stacks.
Yes.
Another one that gets people is not being honest. Obviously, open lies are pretty expensive. Like, for instance, the resume thing that you were talking about. Like, that could suddenly, you could have accepted that lie and gotten the job and then been there for 2 or 3 months and they figure it out and they fire you.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is hosed then.
Yeah, because not only have I lost that job, but
your reputation is going to get around. If you're in a small market like Nashville, I mean, it might not in Atlanta, but it will here.
Yeah. And
it can still travel at some random time and nail you too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's just, it's just not worth it.
Yeah. And smaller white lies are not cheap either. So even if it was done without the intent to defraud, those can still be expensive. Like, it takes a lot of time to lie well and convincingly, and it takes a lot less time to tell the truth, generally speaking.
And here's the thing. In my situation, I want to ask you guys, especially the other junior developers out there, you know, I've experienced the desperation for finding a job, and I would still rather be without a job than get one on false pretenses and have to worry about that the entire time I was there.
Because, I mean, that lie will eat your time. It'll eat your ability to focus the entire time you're there. Another one is that's, lying to yourself is especially pernicious. So when you tell yourself things that you want to be true, you can burn through so much time, it's not even funny. Like, if you tell yourself that, oh, I'm always going to have this job, I'm going to have this job 20 years from now, so it's okay if I work on the weekend right now, you know, off clock, and I do a bunch of extra work. The thing is when that job goes away, you've lost all that time, and you know it from the get-go. That is always a risk there. So it's going to be hanging over your head, and it will hurt you on time management.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the same thing is as acting as if you want to do something that you really don't want to do, that's going to make you resent it.
Saying things like, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, they want somebody to manage whatever, and you don't want to be a manager, but they ask you, and instead of saying no, you go, oh, yeah, I'll do that. What ends up happening? Well, you're unhappy, and it's going to start that snowball of I can't be effective at what I'm doing, you know. Even so, and this really, the honesty thing kind of comes, you know, dovetails nicely into the next point, which is poor communication. Bad communication is a tremendous time sink.
Yeah, a lot of developers really dislike face to face and phone communication, but They're
happy to send snarky texts.
Yeah. The thing is, those are often the fastest way to keep a situation from spiraling out of control.
Yeah. If somebody's starting to get ticked at you, you call them on the phone right then. You don't go back and forth over email. Like, when there's a problem, you handle it with a human voice, not text on a screen. Because if you don't, you will spend whatever time that you think you're saving and more correcting the problem after it blows up in your face.
Sometimes you just have to tell a good friend that they're wasting your time.
Yeah.
Like the other day when you and I got into a debate about
Legs. Yeah.
You were like, dude, I don't have time for this. Go join a debate team or something.
Yeah.
Because I was just like coming back with stuff, and I was in a foul mood that day to begin with.
Yeah.
And then
didn't do that over phone, right?
No,
you didn't. And I was kind of somewhat razzing you.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that it didn't look that way on the other end, but it's very, like, poor communication will really do that. Because,
well, here's the thing, that was Friday.
Yeah.
Saturday we had the Code Newbie thing, And we were so busy being the organizers of that, we each had our own tasks to do that we didn't get to communicate much during that. Sunday, we were both had our own things. So Monday,
he who shall not be named is like, are you mad at him? Y'all haven't. And I'm like, not that I know of. Should I be?
I'll tell you why. It's because I asked him.
Yeah.
Because you told me you were sick.
Right.
And so I didn't want to pester you about this, but I had an interview later that day. And like, I was seriously sitting, waiting to go into the interview.
Yeah. Trying to figure it out. And like, that was just a complete.
I texted he who shall not be named. I'm like, dude, is Will mad at me about Friday? And he's like, why would he be? I'm like, because we kind of got into this debate and then it ended with him saying, hey, I've really got to get to work.
Yeah. And he contacted me and I'm like, dude, I've been dry heaving all day.
Like, yeah, so he was back to me. He's like, he's sick. And I'm like, yeah, I know. That's why I'm asking you, because you were with him Friday and I know he's sick. So I want to ask you, was he mad at me Friday? Because we didn't get to talk over the weekend.
And how many people's time was wasted because I didn't make a freaking phone call?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how much angst and headache was that for everybody, including myself, hanging over the toilet bowl, dry heaving?
Yeah.
And going and getting a Hangouts message and going, I, you know, this is like the worst time to have this conversation.
And here I am. I'm sitting here about to go into an interview. Just like you know how it is when you're about to go into an interview? You're trying to get yourself in the right mindset and then something just like completely derails it.
And you don't ever want to do that.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in that situation.
And that's why I was I texted him, because I'm like, hey, is he mad at me? Because I didn't want to bother you. I knew you were sick. I guess he didn't really care that you were sick and bothered you anyways.
He didn't care at all.
He's like, he seemed a little frustrated at first, but then he kind of laughed about it. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, thanks. I guess because he kept texting me. So I think he was talking to you and like trying to resolve the issue to help
that me. Didn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, once he said you weren't mad at me, I'm like, all right, cool. Moving on.
Well, and the fix for this is to use the clearest communication channel that you can to get the information. That would be all the information.
Yes.
Across to the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
To whoever's supposed to have it. Either you're getting the information or you're giving the information so that you don't burn through a bunch of time. This happens with specs too, right? Like, it's not just an interpersonal thing.
Yeah.
Because I've run into this on actually the project I'm on right now. We had a big back and forth because somebody read a spec and it was not stated clearly what needed to be done, or not clearly enough. You know, it probably saved somebody an hour writing the spec to not put it clearly, and we probably spent 15 hours cleaning up the mess. Like, you talk about a time sink and a half. This will just absolutely burn you. So just take the time to do this right.
Next is working on the wrong things for long-term purposes. Now, a lot of poor time management is, frankly, people just working on the wrong things. And it's very easy to just be busy.
Well, like, you can always be checking your email. You can always be doing market research. Like, you can market research to death on anything.
Yeah, something I really like the next statement you have on here, which is, there's a reason that physics differentiates between force and work. Most people are forceful. Few are working.
Yeah. Like, you always want to be actually moving forward and doing things that actually move the needle for you, not just exerting effort. Because you can exert effort forever. You can be Sisyphus pushing that rock up the hill until you die.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not actually being effective at it, you'll eat up all of your time. And a lot of times being effective is something you have to really think about. You have to go, okay, is this task that I'm doing right now, is this going to matter tomorrow? Is it going to matter a week from now? Is it going to matter a year from now? If it doesn't, then you need to figure out how to get rid of that task or do it less. You know, like, it doesn't need to be this thing of, oh yeah, this is a recurring problem that just eats time and money. Like, no. You don't want those, because those things build up. Because they also take away time that you need for other things. The next one is habit stacking, or failing to do so. And what I'm talking about there is, you also have to think about, as you're improving things, the order that you put those things in. And this is why I recommend using something like David Allen's getting things done method, the GTD stuff, before trying to actually cut your task list or to lay out your schedule. And the reason is you can burn through a whole lot of time when you don't have a to-do list because you don't know what's actually going on, right? So the habit of going, okay, here's something I've got to do, put it on the list and get that out of my head, that comes before the other things. And you'll see a lot of these kind of situations as you're trying to become more effective. It's a lot like budgeting. Like if you listen to Dave Ramsey or pretty much any of the financial guys, what's one thing they tell you? They tell you have an emergency fund, like have $1,000, have a month's worth of expenses, have this much before you really start going hardcore on the debt. And the reason is because if you start going hardcore on the debt and you don't have the emergency fund, what happens? First thing that goes slightly wrong, your debt gets bigger because you didn't have any ability to absorb it because you dumped everything into the debt.
Yeah. So the fix for this is to figure out a long-term plan for improving your time management.
Yeah.
And this kind of goes back to when we talked about using behavioral modification in an earlier episode. Yeah. You want to figure out the optimal order for the pieces. Don't just try something because somebody said it worked or it was on a blog. Really, what you want to do is you want to look at what you're doing now and collect some data on that. Figure out a set of habits that you can add one at a time to continually improve your time management and order it in such a way that the earlier tasks help build on the later tasks.
Yeah. And that's why I recommend, you know, starting out with a to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even, well, actually starting out with time tracking first and then going to a, you know, adding a to-do list and then trying to get your calendar sorted out and then start outsourcing tasks, eliminating tasks, automating tasks is because each of those little steps supports the bigger steps and makes it where instead of a snowball of interest on the time debt, you have a snowball of accrued interest on your time investment.
Next is starting tasks too early or failing to procrastinate.
Yeah. And this one is a little counterintuitive because it kind of goes against the normal work ethic a little bit. Some people got an ingrained, actually pretty much all of us have some work habits that are ingrained that are not necessarily to our benefit past a certain point. And one of those is jumping on stuff to do as soon as it arrives. A lot of times you'll get tasks that they'll say, okay, yeah, you need to do this. And then you go do it. And then you find out that, oh yeah, we really didn't need that.
Well, what been there, done that.
Oh yeah. And I've had quite a few jobs that's been a significant problem. And what did you just do with your time?
Wasted it completely. Yeah,
it's gone. And you also showed everybody how little value it has. And that can't be overstated how bad that is. A lot of other people really don't have their stuff together very well. I know if you get on social media, you'll look around at all the people that you see and you think that they really do because they're posting, you know, they're posting the top 10% of their life and you're comparing it to 100% of yours. Most people really are kind of basket cases as far as actually getting their time management, getting their attention management down. Like that's why we have perpetual cycles of debt. That's why we have people having lifelong dreams that they don't fulfill. And a lot of times, if you wait until the last responsible moment to start something, the task will change. Documentation will be clear. You know, there'll be more stakeholder stuff. The task will change in size and scope, timeline, those kind of things will shift.
I'd also say that by jumping on some tasks immediately, you're showing that, like you said, that your time has less value. This tends to lead to other people finding stuff for you to do.
Yeah. And it can be social too. It doesn't necessarily have to be just work, right?
Yeah.
Because how many friends, when you had a truck, like at any point, anybody that has a truck knows exactly what I'm about to say. So I'm not even going to say it.
Yeah.
Because if you had a truck, you know what happens to you.
Let's just say it for those that have never had a truck.
Okay.
When you have a truck, people ask for your help moving.
Yep.
Always. You are the first person they call because, hey, I've got a buddy with a truck. He can help me move.
Yeah, because his time is not worth anything and screw what that guy's doing. And, you know, like you don't want to get in that sort of feedback loop because the other thing is once you do it once, guess what? You're going to be doing it all the time. And if you do it too quickly and too easily, you're going to be doing it on short notice. I've got to move tonight, and I've known about this move for 6 months, but I'm just telling you tonight.
This is why I ask for gas money, pizza, and beer, extremely short notice, a little cash, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not being mean to my friends, but, like, really, I probably had planned on working on something that was going to make me money.
Yeah, or make your life better.
Yeah.
And this is something that's, you know, it's great that it's good for them, and you want to do it for your close friends, but on occasion. Because you also have that friend that moves all the time, too.
I'll give you an example. Our friend, we'll call him Spider. He called me up about 3 weeks ago and asked if I could help him move. He had bought some posts for his house and asked, he's like, hey, you got a truck. You don't live too far away. Like literally I live less than 10 minutes away from him. He's like, would you mind, you know, coming out? He's like, I'll give you gas money and, you know, we can grill out and have beers.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And he called me 3 weeks ahead of time to ask me this.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a considerate friend, right?
That really is. It actually kind of surprised me because he's known for doing things very last minute.
Yeah, that's not what I would have expected. But
yeah, I think it's a matter of he's matured as we've gotten older.
Yeah,
he's he knows people have, you know, because he has in the past asked me to help him out with stuff. And I'm like, I can't. If you'd called me, you know, a week ago and said this, I wouldn't have made plans.
Yeah, and so I've got three or four friends like that that still haven't quite locked on to this sudden shift in plans thing doesn't work. So really jumping on tasks a lot of times like that really shows kind of a low value, and you just need to be careful not to start on things just because they're there. Like take the date that task is due, figure out how long it's going to take you with some padding, and then work backward from the due date. And that tells you when to actually start. Like that's the last responsible moment that you can. And you do want to pad so that you don't get nailed.
Yeah. And this also doesn't mean you blow off the deadline.
Right.
Because that sort of thing.
Well, we're responsible adults, right? We're not reactive adults. Those are two very different things.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Yeah, somebody that's always reacting is not responsible. Because they're not triaging the problem beforehand. Mm-hmm.
The next way you can fail is by not clearing off smaller tasks. Having a pile of work hanging over your head tends to make you work slower.
Yeah, and a lot of people with to-do lists, and I do this all the time too, and I'll periodically look and just be like, I've got so much to do. There's like 14 tasks on my list, and all of them, except one, are five-minute tasks. But they're on the list, and it just looks like this unbelievable amount of work because we don't look at task lists and go, how much time is this going to take? Especially with, you know, simple to-do lists, right? So it's very easy to find yourself in a situation where you feel overwhelmed when you really don't have that much to do. It just, there's a lot of items.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So when you clear those smaller tasks off, that kind of helps that problem. Like you periodically want to do that.
You have on here to start your day by obliterating small tasks. That kind of goes back to something that we've talked about before, too, with getting the small wins early.
Yeah.
It just sets you up for success.
Yeah. It's a mental thing, and it's one of those things that everybody goes, well, that shouldn't matter. And it's like, well, it shouldn't, but shouldn't doesn't rule the world, does it?
Yeah.
And so, like, that's one thing I've tried to consciously do is actually leave something to do first thing in the morning that's small. So, you know, as soon as I get there, I hit the ground running, I take that task out, it's off the list, I get the nice little bit of feedback there of, oh yeah, you know, I already killed a task and it's, you know, 10 after 7 and, you know, I'm rolling now. And that task isn't sitting there at noon when I come back from lunch. And so I'm not getting discouraged, if that makes sense. You can also do things like with your task list where you keep small, low priority tasks in a separate list. Like don't put them on your main active list. This comes from the getting things done thing is, you know, prioritization. It's like, I don't want to see those tasks if they're not top priority because I'm going to get a cognitive overhead. There's always going to be a cognitive overhead of having to do things. And sometimes if the tasks are small enough, the overhead is worse than actually going and doing the task. Another thing that will get you after a while is being emotionally enmeshed in other people's problems. People with problems, especially like continual problems, not like, oh, hey, you know, their spouse died, but these things where, okay, their spouse is an alcoholic, problems tend to continue is the best way to put this. And this is not meant as a slight towards any group, but what ends up happening when you have somebody that is just really, really tangled up around their own problems is that those problems will always be there. And if you try to fix it, you will always be there. And again, this isn't true of all people and all problems, but it's true often enough to be aware of. And frankly, a lot of people's problems are there by their own choices. Like, it may be that, okay, it's painful to get out of this situation, but you're staying in it and you're in pain too. And you're choosing to be in a medium amount of pain for a very long time versus a large amount of pain for a short period of time.
You especially want to be careful of people who characterize themselves as unlucky.
Yes.
This doesn't mean that you don't help legitimate close friends that you actually care about, but rather that you prioritize such help in a way that doesn't eat into your life.
Right. And I mean, it can eat into it a little bit, like if it's a really close friend, but you don't, you know, if it's somebody that you just met at work and they're going through a bad breakup, like, you don't need to be in that.
However, if it's someone that you've known for 15, 20 years,
yeah,
that's going through a very rough time.
Right.
You know, someone that has been there for you and you've been there for them over many instances throughout those 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Then it's an investment.
Well, the other thing too is on that, you still have to watch it, right? Because the other thing is you have to have a sense that it's actually going to get better, because it's very easy to give somebody crutches until they can't walk. And it's, you know, this is a personal problem that I have, is I have a tendency to jump in and help people a lot of times more than I should and get, you know, emotionally involved with that help. Mm-hmm. Now, like in your case, with everything that was going on with you, that was appropriate because, you know, we've been friends for freaking ever. And, you know, I knew the situation and I was actually able to help you and you were willing to listen and you got traction and you're pretty much out of the woods. But I've also done that with people that I've worked with that I really wasn't all that close to. It's like I may have known them for a long time, but their problems became my problem.
Well, I'm sure you remember me doing this a lot back when we were in college. I tended to collect people like this because I liked helping. You don't have to be a nice person.
You like the feedback of helping people.
Yeah. I like the feedback of helping people. And so I did. And I didn't realize the drain it was having on me until...
You didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something I've really had to learn the hard way is how to prioritize that and just be like, you know, nope, dude, you're screwed. I'm not in this. You know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of awful, but to some degree, it's a manifestation of poor boundaries. And those will eat your ability to get anything done and to make your own life better. And people go, oh, well, that's really self-interested. Here's the thing. If you help some random person that you don't know well to the point where it nearly breaks your life, when your best friend has a problem, you have no resources. And then you're watching your best friend's life come apart with no ability to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to be really careful and conserve your energy like that and conserve your time. You'll notice a lot of these things are right on the edge of emotional health and time. It's because at this point they're linked.
And finally, Will has under here productivity porn.
Yes. So
for lack of a better term.
Yeah. So like if you're on Lifehacker every day, looking at the best way to do something that you're never going to do, because you want to look at productivity, right? This will eat you alive because everybody has got their own method. And a lot of these people go, I want to get out of my day job. So what am I going to do? I'm going to write a book on how to be more productive because there's not enough of those in the market.
Oh my goodness. All the blogs, when you're looking at productivity stuff, I mean, you know, we haven't done an episode on productivity.
Yeah.
Because there's so much
It's been junk. Beaten to death.
I mean, there's a lot of good stuff, but there's so much junk out there. If anything, all we would be doing is wading through it for you guys and saying, here's the good stuff, here's the crap.
And we don't want to do that because it's awful.
Exactly.
I mean, like, and we're very good about prioritizing and going, yeah, this is heinous. I don't want to do this. The biggest thing is don't be like flipping through a whole bunch of different systems and going, oh, well, I could do this or I could do this. And this guy says this, and this guy, like, if you start to sound like an expert in your own head, you need to stop and pick a system and go with it. Yeah, it's the same thing with martial arts too, right? Because you know the guy that dojo hops.
Yeah, I do know that guy.
Yeah.
I won't mention any names, but I do know that guy.
Yeah. And what happens? Well, they don't get any actual skill at anything because they're sampling.
And it's also very easy to become a connoisseur of productivity systems, you know, without actually being productive.
Well, this is why people write productivity posts, right? Is they're not actually productive people and they have to feel like they're doing something. You know, I don't want to call out an industry, but yeah, I do really. That's pretty bad. Like, there's a bunch of snake oil salesmen.
Oh yeah,
in there, okay. And it's just atrocious.
So that pretty much wraps up the ways to fail. This is not an exhaustive list, but kind of some lesser known ways that you can fail at time management, and some things that once you've hit the bigger points and you're still wanting to improve your time management, that you can look at. Before we close everything out, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
Well, we talked about the ways that you can mess up your ability to manage your time and how very small things can snowball. And this is something that is kind of hard to get your head around in software development, because it's very difficult to think about all the stuff that can go wrong all the time. One of the big points that I was really trying to push here with all this stuff is that you deal with problems as quickly as you can, right? You want to not be in a situation where a problem continues to get worse. And this ties directly into the way that you error handle in the applications that you're building, because I see a lot of code out there, and I'm not going to call any names. Actually, I am. MSDN. Where they will show you how to do something and they'll put error handling code in there, but the error handler just goes, oh, hey, I got an error. Let's just go on like nothing happened. And that's not really what you want to do, because this small errors that are ignored, small, you know, little bitty things that you're like, oh, hey, this file isn't here. Let's return -1. And then the caller goes, okay, I got, you know, instead of getting a 0, I got a -1. But oh, it turns out the caller, you know, is somebody that's a total slob. And so they don't pay attention to what happened. And then they go ahead and they try to do something else and they crash a bigger process. So you want to catch problems as early as you possibly can and fail fast. Like when there's legitimately something majorly wrong. Like, it doesn't need to be this thing of, okay, let's just hide the error. And this ties back into the time management thing, because this is how you fail at a higher level, is you are taking an error condition and essentially saying this isn't a problem. So, you know, look over the list of things that we mentioned in this episode, because I think you'll see a whole lot of that. And this same attitude will help you a lot in your development as well. So that's what I got.
Stand by for Titanfall.
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at CompleteDeveloperPodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with the news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.